It's like with anything. When you're buying something, lots of times you get this long list of lots of words and lots of consonants and lots of verbiage that says, you should know this and you should know that and you should know this and you should know that. All the fine print. Same thing goes with the contractor. When you're signing the contractor, you get all this fine print. But do you need to look at that fine print? And what are some red flags when you look at that fine print that say, wait a second here?
Hey, Let's Build It with Corey Heppala and from Lindus Construction, Andy Lindus.
Yeah, I see all this fine print and I'm never quite sure. Do I need to read it? And then what if there's something in there that I have a concern about? Is it just standard practice? What are some red flags when reviewing a contractor's contract, Andy?
You know, the biggest red flag, the stuff that I get to see on a regular basis, you know, as we meet with more and more people, they've gotten other estimates, and a lot of times they like to show us these contracts. And if there's a lot of crossouts and rehandwriting stuff and changes made to the contract, that's usually, it's not like a giant red flag, but that's a flag to me that maybe all of the details of the job, everything that you've talked about on the job, the scope of work, the way it should be done, aren't maybe as good as they could be. Or what I saw the other day, you know, the price started at $9,000, then was crossed off to $7,500, then was crossed off to $5,500, then was crossed off to $4,500, and the scope of work never changed. That's usually a red flag that maybe this contractor doesn't have the most integrity. And if they don't have integrity up front on the price, what other kind of corners are they going to cut when they're doing the job? So those two things are something I see more often than not. The other thing, Corey, is start and end dates. In today's day and age, that should be something that you strive for, because I know people that are waiting 8, 9, 10, 12 months longer than they anticipated at the beginning for projects that they're working on. These are people that are calling us and be like, hey, contractor doesn't even call me back. I gave them $30,000 8 months ago and they did part of the job, but now they can't get this material, they can't get that material. What's going on? There should be clear and concise timelines. And when those changes to the timelines happen, there should be a clear and concise process that the contractor uses to communicate that with the customer. If not, you're kind of in la-la land and you don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, handwritten notes on a contract would kind of be a red flag to me. Like if you have one of those hyphens that says, actually, it's this. Like, No, I kind of want my contract to have not just vague terms, but I want it to be set in stone. Like this shouldn't be something you're just whimsically writing on.
Yeah, there should be, like whenever we do a project, the scope of work is custom built for that project. So you're not only are you going to have a contract, and legally in most states, Corey, there's things that you have to put in the contract about the cancellation period, about down payments, about the right to be able to fix your mistakes, or what happens should things go sideways at the end. And so most states have things that you have to put in there all the time. In fact, more often than not, if we get in these conversations all the time from customers asking us to change things about our contract, like, no. Our contract is what it is. We've been in business for, you know, since 1979. We've literally never once been taken to the court on anything. But there's all this stuff in here that it protects both the contractor and the customer in the long run. So if you just follow your state's guidelines at the bare minimum, usually you're in a good spot. And those guidelines are readily available and searchable on the internet, where you could find that and compare to what this contract has.
You brought up an interesting point though on payment schedule, and then also to start and end date. And I imagine it's a little bit more difficult now than it has been in previous years because of COVID and then all the access to products and all these different things. But so I'm curious on like from a customer's perspective, how much leeway should they have with somebody? Like if you're putting money down and they say, well, start this time and end at this time, like how much leeway should you give that company before you say, wait a second, there's a problem here?
You know, it's going to depend on the situation. If you're getting good communication from the contractor and he's telling you, or he or she's telling you why there are delays, then I don't think there's a lot to worry about. Now, if those delays keep happening, it's the third time they've delayed things, then you might want to raise some red flags. But I think one of the best payment schedules that a customer can stick to is a third down, a third at start, and then a third upon completion. So you don't pay the final third until you're 100% happy and everything is done. And that's enough money that'll make contractors show up and finish the job, even if it's only, a couple $100 fix, something like that. I wouldn't even hold out the $200. Wait until all of it's done. But when you do a third down, third at start, so now they got an incentive to start the job. They have incentive to finish the job. And then that third up front gets you on their schedule faster. So I think that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah, and if you had mentioned materials as well, like, should all the materials, every single thing be listed? Do we need that in the fine print?
I went, the glues and screws and things like that. But like the finishings and what you're expecting on the project. Yeah. People are going to know the colors that they're going to get, what the end result is going to be. You should have a pretty good picture painted on what this whole project is going to entail from start to finish, the process that happens, the underlayments that are used, and what the finishing products that are used.
You know, you've given us some great advice, and a part of that great advice is this.
Hey, here's health.
Don't cheap out. Just don't cheap out. Just don't say like, hey, you know what? This is $1 extra, or this is $1 cheaper. Like, just don't do that, because you're going to end up buying it again or doing it over again. So do it right the first time, within reason, of course. So I say that because what are the tools, Andy? Anyone would know, you would know. What are the tools you'll end up buying twice if you go cheap in round one?
Well, I do have an exception to the go cheap thing, and that's for any half inch, 9/16 inch, or 10 millimeter socket or wrench, because I have 5 different socket sets. All of them have new 10 millimeter or half inch or 9/16 eventually. So anytime I come across cheap 9/16 or 10 millimeter anything, I buy it because it doesn't last long. Now, the things that you can break if you go cheap are usually on the power tool side. Corey, I've owned over the years probably 11, 12 different brands of power tools. And I can tell you, when I was a young man and I was very budget conscious, I needed something. One, the tools were heavier, but they never made it a season. And once I started spending, even like the brands like Milwaukee, DeWalt, there's different lines of tools that they have. And when you go to one of their higher end tools, now you're talking about something for the average do-it-yourselfer. If you take care of it and it doesn't freeze and the batteries are being charged on a regular basis, you might have something that lasts 10 years. You really could. So things like drills, things like saws, all the brushless features that you can get on those motors now too, all of that makes them last longer, makes them more efficient, makes the batteries last longer. I mean, you buy something cheap on the power tool side, on the battery thing, you're going to be frustrated more often than not. On the hand tool side of things, I would probably lean more towards like caulk gun, or I went through my toolbox and believe it or not, I have 8 different wire strippers in there. And it's because I don't like 6 of them, and I just don't throw stuff away. And I bought cheap stuff. You buy it in the kit and it just never does what you want it to do. So then I bought a Klein wire stripper and a Klein snips. And those two tools I've had now. In fact, my brother gave me the Klein snip for Christmas 6-7 years ago. And it works just as good as the day I bought it. And it gets a lot of use. My Klein wire stripper, it's weekly that I'm doing different things around the shop or in my boat or in the house with it. And it's doubled as a needle nose, a wrench, a socket set. I mean, this thing is bulletproof.
Hold on. So your family gives each other tools for Christmas, even though this is your whole life, like this is your job and they're giving you tools for Christmas?
Hey, one of the best things I have going for me is my two brothers. One, they're my partners in business, all sorts of business. Two, one of them, I think it was my youngest one. And now that I come to think of it, he hasn't lived up to his end of the bargain lately either. But the buy signs to find something cool, you buy 3 of them. Okay, it doesn't matter what it is. If it's an awesome deal or something that you're going to use all the time or something that you're just like, God, I wouldn't want to live without this anymore. You buy 3 and then you gift the other 2. And so sometimes I'll just show up at the office and there'll be a tool on my desk, a heated vest one time, a new pair of boots one time. I mean, it was... We've gotten some pretty cool stuff over the years from our brothers. So yeah, no, tools are, God, look what we do. If we can't get excited and have fun buying tools, we're in the wrong business.
I just think it's funny that he would know exactly what you needed, that you guys are, it'd be like my sister buying me a new microphone. Like, here you go. Here's a new microphone for your job.
Yeah.
You would be,
if your sister was in radio, that might be the thing you need.
That's true. That's a good point. You'd be very proud of me, though. I did use a socket wrench the other day. Like, we bought an elliptical, the like Facebook Marketplace. We went to this person's house.
Assembly required?
Yeah, well, to get it out of the house, like, because we bought it used. So we had to get it out of her house and then up into our new family van. It didn't quite fit. So listen to me. Like, this is a big project for me. We get it in the van, my wife and I, and we've got the straps in there, so it's strapped, but the door doesn't come down in the van. So we've got to drive like 30 miles, not even, like 20 miles an hour through the city, and we did back roads because the thing wasn't going to fall out, but still, we didn't want to take it too fast. But it was strapped in, wasn't hanging out there. I did talk with State Patrol this week, and they said you would not have been ticketed, so I'm fine there. But we got it back, and then we had to put it back together, and together we were able to accomplish this. And now it's in the garage waiting for you to come over and help and get it in the basement.
And get it in the basement. Does it work?
It works. Yes. We've used it every single day. So
no parts and no parts left over.
Nope. And smartly, my wife put them into baggies. She's like, okay, when we took it apart at their house, we kind of knew, okay, it's easy just to put these few pieces back together. But these are the utensils that are needed for this side. And then these are the tools and the screws that are needed for this side. And then we labeled them in baggies left and right. And then there you go. We were able to do it smartly and efficiently is the other point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you about tools.
Hey, here's what's trending.
And you may have already answered this, but the other thing I wanted to ask about tools, just, you know, name a couple. What are the tools that every homeowner needs in their arsenal?
Oh, wire strippers is definitely one for me. A good side cutters or snips for a variety of things. When it comes to power tools, you can get a lot done with a multi-tool and a good power drill. That multi-tool has sanding blades, has blades that can cut. You know, you can use it just like a circular saw on a piece of plywood. You can make a nice straight 4 foot long cut on quarter inch plywood pretty easily with it. I have, and I've this wood behind here was basically installed with a nail gun, and that multi-tool was the number one saw that I used. So if I had to pick two power tools to be able to go after almost every project, the multi-tool or the oscillating saw, as some call them, and then a good brushless power drill.
Yeah. And I mean, we're assuming that everybody has like a hammer and nails. I mean, I think everybody would have that.
Exactly. And if they're like me, there's a lot of tools that can turn into a hammer in a pinch.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. What do I have around me that I can use to pile this thing in here?
The drill that you have with a dead battery is usually not a good option for that, by the way.
We got a new power drill because it was a little bit smaller. The one we had was larger. And so my wife's like, it just doesn't fit into this smaller area that I need for this one. So I kind of rolled my eyes. I'm like, really, do we need another one? But I actually, she was right. We did.
Mm-hmm. I have both the bigger Milwaukee one and then the M12 model. So a little smaller drill.
That's the one.
And it makes stuff happen.
Yeah. From somebody that has never done any of this stuff, I'm always like, wait, do we need that? And then it turns out we always do. But I've learned so much from this and from you.
Hey, here's a pointer.
Andy, what do you got for a tip?
So that time of year, nights are going to happen faster. I've been running into, I don't know if it is just because it's a dry out or what, but bugs have been killing me this year. My truck, I can't keep it clean. I've gone through more bug and tar remover because of the road construction that's happening this year than I ever have. And I finally decided to work smarter, not harder. And I got this little buffer pad. It works almost like a magic eraser on my Milwaukee M12 drill. Mm-hmm. And this one is just made for buffing. And so I sprayed the bug and tar remover on there. I run this over. It literally, don't pressure. It takes me an extra 30 seconds. And then I can spray it off with a hose and not even have to break out the pressure washer. That it works that well. And it's saved that much time. I'm like, I don't know why. I bet you this year alone, if I'd have gotten it early in the year, Corey, we're probably talking 3 hours of my life would have been saved on this little $120 drill.
So
for me, worth it.
Okay, so like if you have bugs on your car, it'll clean it off quicker. Can you use it as a preventative tool?
Well, what I've been doing is after I do the bug and tar remover, I take a spray wax and I put it on and I change the head of the buffer and I go on with the spray wax on that and then take it off with a microfiber. So the bugs then are easier to come off. But when you have trailers like we do and everything, we want our stuff to look nice. We don't want to show up at somebody's house with Bugmageddon on the front of our, vehicles. We're going home at night and we live out in the country, a lot of us. So, I mean, you go through a swarm of whatever. And it can take away from the paint. I've had to peel like paint off of my trailers and like them to last a little bit longer than a year.
Yeah, no kidding. I totally can empathize with that. We were driving home from Otter Tail County at like 9-10 o'clock one night, and just driving that 2-3 hours to our home, the Jeep was filthy with bugs, because late at night you just get swarmed by them.
Yeah, not fun. You drive at night, you're going to end up with bugs everywhere. And I get my truck now has a white bumper. What a just a dumb idea. The chrome seemed to blend in the bugs a little bit more than the white bumper. I don't know how long that's going to last.
Yeah, it's like spilling coffee on yourself. You see it every time. Andy, all right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.